Welcome to session 7 of the Yoga Sutra Book Club, Discovering the Essence of Asana Through Pranic Awareness. Sutras 246 to 248. So in the previous two sessions, we've spent a lot of time looking at the eight limbs and yamas and niyamas. And before we go on to these sutras that talk about asana, it's important to go back and look at what the context is for the eight limbs. The eight limbs were introduced explicitly in the context of transcending or transforming the kleshas and seeing how by working with the kleshas and finding a way to remove this veil of affliction, we're able to experience that intrinsic light within, that light of buddhi. That was the goal. The goal of the eight limbs was to experience that viveka khyati, that light of pure discernment. And from there, see how that leads us towards an experience of samadhi, which was the definition of yoga that we explored several times earlier. So the eight limbs is meant to be an experiential path. It's intriguing then that we spend so much time looking at the yamas and niyamas before we get to what we might associate as practice in the conventional sense. These sutras that begin with 246 are really where the practice of yoga begins for most people. And in the two sessions that we spent looking at yamas and niyamas, what we really arrived at was that yamas and niyamas are as active of a practice as practice of asana, once we see them that way, in terms of the yamas and niyamas allowing us to cultivate a new worldview, a new way of seeing ourselves, a new way of seeing the world, a new relationship towards ourselves. That's why it's the foundation. Without that, practice is just practice. It's another thing to do. But once we see the rest of the eight limbs in context to the yamas and niyamas, it takes on a whole new life, a whole new meaning. And it's equally intriguing that so much time is spent talking about the siddhis, the unique accomplishments associated with the 10 yamas and niyamas. That's what the entire last session was about. And what we reached at there is that there's an extraordinary amount of capacity in our body and mind that manifests when all of the limitations that we've imposed on ourselves, one way or the other, begin to be removed. Those siddhis that we talked about in the previous 11 sutras all were the unique qualities that are brought forward from our essential self nature. It's not that we created something out of nothingness, but rather those capacities were intrinsic to who we were, but somehow we weren't able to access them. The unique active practice of the yamas and niyamas in a very potent way, a mature, highly intense mastery over a specific yama and niyama results in a very unique kind of capacity. Those capacities are unique capacities of our body and mind, mainly of our mind. That's the kind of yamas and niyamas that are the foundation for the other limbs that follow. It's a highly active practice. Practice that allows us to fundamentally change how we see ourselves and see the world. That's extremely important to keep in mind. The topic that we gave to this session was discovering the essence of asana through pranic awareness. So keep that idea of pranic awareness in mind and see what that has to do with what the yamas and niyamas can give to us as far as cultivating a completely new experience of ourself and experience of the world. Before we go on to talk about these three simple sutras that appear deceptively simple, it's important to look at two other very important principles that we've already covered that give a unique context and meaning to asana. First one is idea of abhyasa. So in the entire first book of the Yoga Sutra, Samadhipada, Secret of the Yoga Sutra, everything was aligned around the idea of abhyasa and vairagya being the practice of yoga, being those twin essential qualities of practice that everything is aligned around. And that by practicing of abhyasa and vairagya, the goal of yoga, which at that time was defined as gaining mastery over the mind's roaming tendencies, the vrittis. And once that mastery is achieved, samadhi emerges. Very simple, but not so simple. Abhyasa and vairagya was expressed in that context. Abhyasa has everything to do with asana and all the limbs that follow. We defined asana as the ardent effort to cultivate a peaceful flow of awareness. The ardent effort to experience a peaceful flow of awareness. That definition, that very simple definition of abhyasa, goes to the very heart of the eight limbs. And that's the thread, really, that holds specifically asana and all the limbs that follow. It's extremely simple and yet very, very important that whatever it takes to experience and maintain a peaceful flow of awareness is what asana and all of the limbs that follow are all about. We talked about the word abhyasa being too vague, too ambiguous, too big, and also frustrating how the conventional translation of the word abhyasa, for the most part, is practice. That doesn't tell me anything. I'm even more aggravated in some regards because I don't know what I'm supposed to do. It might be overly simplistic to say, but it's a useful parallel to draw, that the eight limbs are the what, or the how, rather. If abhyasa is the what am I supposed to experience, peaceful flow of awareness, how am I supposed to reach there? Through a systematic practice of the eight limbs. And again, it doesn't just begin with asana. It's extremely intriguing to reflect on how the yamas and niyamas lay the foundation for us to experience a peaceful flow of awareness. In part, it seems like these yamas and niyamas are just making sure that we don't get in our own way. All the ethical principles that we need to adopt in our life so that we don't end up making more obstacles that prevent us from leading a peaceful life. And in part, that's true. They are a prerequisite or a foundation. But as we explored last session, it's more than just a foundation. They're a unique practice that allows us to actually experience a unique expression of that peaceful flow of awareness. We get a taste, and we're able to really internalize that when we begin working with asana and the other limbs that continue. So we'll come back to this idea of abhyasa as we get into these three sutras, but just connect it back to Samadhipada and look back at how much emphasis was placed on this deceptively simple idea of a peaceful flow of awareness. And we'll connect this idea back to pranic awareness, being this peaceful flow of awareness in experience. Abhyasa experientially is no different than pranic awareness. But we need a way to actually reach there, to actually feel it. That's where asana is the launching pad. Second principle, or second idea that's really worth bringing back before we dive into asana and all the other limbs, is exactly where we began this book study group, Sutra 2.1, the idea of Kriya Yoga, the idea of tapas, swadhyaya, and Ishwara Pranidhana, which incidentally is exactly where we left off last session with the last three niyamas. But remember, when we looked at Sutra 2.1, we saw tapas, swadhyaya, and Ishwara Pranidhana expressed as the heart of yoga, or yoga shakti, yoga in action, that force which brings yoga to life. So we need to find a way to see how these three words can breathe some new meaning into all the limbs, but especially asana onward. To see how these principles of tapas, swadhyaya, Ishwara Pranidhana transform technique into something more. Because the biggest challenge we face with asana is that it's something that we do with our body. It's another thing that we do. Rather than asana being a gateway to a deeper experience, an inner experience. And also, other challenge is that often we see asana as only as a distinct practice in and of itself and not as a bridge between the yamas and niyamas and the limbs that follow asana. It's part of a living practice which has 8 limbs. One way to ensure that we see asana as the heart, almost the midpoint of a living practice, is by seeing that thread that connects it, which is abhyasa. And 2, by remembering that there's a life force, a pulsation, literally a spiritual heart that allows asana to be part of a living body of practice consisting of 8 limbs, rather than being something which we dissected like a cadaver and removed one portion just for the sake of looking at it in isolation to everything else. It's impossible to see one organ from the rest unless you take it out. But when you do that, it's no longer part of a living body. Practicing asana in light of Kriya Yoga ensures that we're not doing an autopsy on yoga, but rather we're living yoga. We're trying to experience a living body of 8 limbs. And it doesn't mean that we can't practice asana in isolation to the other limbs for the sake of study and gaining proficiency in a particular technique. But if our goal is to seek a deeper, richer, inner experience that leads to some of those big claims or big goals of yoga, like the idea of viveka khyati, unveiling that light of our buddhi, that light of inner discernment, which can light the way all the way to samadhi, fairly huge claim. Asana alone won't do that. Asana alone could bring us many positive experiences, but not the goals which are described earlier in this text, in this second book or the first one. That's why it's important to reflect on asana in light of Kriya Yoga. What does tapas mean here? Tapas means, in the context of asana, is seeing how we can unleash that inner radiance, which is the literal meaning of tapas, that radiant, glowing capacity within by bringing discipline to our body, breath, and senses. A unique capacity, a unique shakti, which is radiant, which allows us to glow and allows us to see ourselves and see the world, can be brought forth through asana and the limbs that follow. That expression of tapas has so much to do with prana, this extraordinarily vibrant pulsation of life force, which not only animates our body, which is the primary way that we're working with asana, but animates every other aspect of ourself too. Working with pranic awareness is a huge part of tapas in the context of asana. Swadhyaya, idea of self-knowledge, is also integral to asana. Because as we work with deeper layers of ourself, beginning first with our physical capacity, we unveil so many things which we never even knew we had within. We're literally being introduced to our own capacity, one layer at a time. In that regard, asana is like the owner's manual with regard to our physical capacity and that aspect of our physical capacity which introduces us to our pranic potential. If we don't know how to reach there, we won't even know who we are. How can we gain swadhyaya, the capacity to reflect on who we are, if we don't have a way in? Asana is a very tangible way in, so we can begin to experience who we are in completely new ways that are very real. The beauty here is that it's completely grounded in real experience. And it stretches our understanding of what reality is all about. What begins as a physical practice becomes an energetic or experiential practice that's more and more subtle, which is why it bridges to the other limbs. Of Kriya Yoga, these first two, tapas and swadhyaya, have the most direct application in asana. Ishvara Pranidhana really takes us to the last sutra that we'll talk about today, actually the middle one. So we'll come back to that. We'll come back to the idea of how Ishwara Pranidhana relates to Ananta Samapatti. But for the time being, we know that to bring our asana practice to life, there needs to be a dimension of tapas, that purpose-driven discipline that we bring in our practice, which allows us to feel more deeply alive than we ever knew, which allows that inner radiance to actually be experienced in some unique way. And we use that experience to redefine who we are. Rather than saying that we're defined by the world and the experiences outside of us, we allow this kind of experience to tell us who we are from the inside out. That is Swadhyaya, real knowledge of ourself. With that in mind, let's go back to the sutras. 246. This sutra is the one that's, of any sutra that could be put on a bumper sticker, this is the one that it would probably be it. Which is why it seems like, well, we can skip over it because we've already heard it dozens, hundreds, thousands of times. Is there anything new in the idea of asana being a stable, comfortable posture? Sthiram sukham asanam. Yes, there's something new. Difficulty when something is so simple is that we think it's very basic, not realizing that the most essential truths are very, very simple. Looking at 246 in context to abhyasa is our entry point. What does sthira and sukha have to do with abhyasa? What do the idea of stability and comfort have to do with the peaceful flow of awareness? Quite a bit. Because at first glance, when we look at the idea of stability and comfort only in context to our body, we get one perspective. Stability being defined as a unique alignment of body where we feel centered, grounded, balanced. Alignment that very much has to do with our physical posture. And of course, it begins with that. The difficulty there is that we know that there's no one size fits all. There's clearly dozens of different approaches and philosophies to alignment itself. Either we'll have to choose to believe that many, many of those opinions are wrong and only one is right, or that there's something deeper which allows multiple expressions of the idea of physical alignment to be right. Which of course makes complete sense because there's 7 billion different bodies which could probably be broadly categorized in a couple dozen different ways that those bodies function. There are many different ways for a human body to feel stable and for that stability to express itself through different forms of alignment in different ways that the body is used. The stability that we're talking about here is something more. It's the idea that our body can hold us in a way which leads us to a genuine experience of stability, where we allow ourselves to truly be held by our body. Most of the time, there's much more conscious effort involved in holding ourselves than we realize. And a lot of that has to do with not really being familiar with our body itself. So asana re-familiarizes ourselves with our body and allows us the opportunity to see if we can be held by our body naturally. One other way of saying, of defining sthiram or stability is a natural state of being in our body. Our body is intrinsically stable. Our body is not born imbalanced, uncentered, ungrounded, flawed. It's perfect. We're completely held by our body, and it's wonderful. We need to remember how that feels. And it takes a lot of practice to remember how it feels. Another way of looking at asana are unique energetic configurations of the body. where we reprogram how we feel in the body. The point of that reconditioning, reprogramming, the point of all the different expressions of conscious movement and conscious stillness is to go through a range of different experiences where we redefine what it feels like to be in our body and see what aspect of our body is truly holding us. And what we begin to experience is that it's not that our body is holding us, but rather our body is being held in a unique space. Our body occupies a unique space, and that space is what allows our body to feel stable, to be held. And we're held by that experience. One of the things that asana often does is allow us to feel a sense of expansiveness, inner space. That's exactly what stability is all about. Once that principle of sthiram, stability, manifests through practice, we feel a sense of ease and comfort, which is sukham. The literal translation of sukham that's often given is this idea of space filled with goodness. What does that goodness really mean? Of course, it's a sense of freedom from pain, freedom from restriction. And we define that space which is free from pain to be a good space, pleasant space. It's a healing space. It's a space where we have the opportunity to experience a peaceful flow of awareness, abhyasa. If any part of that phrase, peaceful flow of awareness, was easy to define, it would be the peaceful part, because we have a number of reference points. There's a lot of aspects of life which we know are contrary to peace. The most vivid one being pain, distraction, a diffused awareness, something which pulls us away from what we want to experience. All those things are what we're really trying to overcome through sthiram and sukham. Trying to see how we can be in our body and experience a peaceful flow of awareness within our body. The idea of the word flow here is very useful, because so much of asana, certainly in the modern context, is an experience of conscious movement. There's a lot of movement in many forms of asana, where we're trying to move purposefully, so conscious movement, to help us feel something in ourselves. Classical asana is not trying to use that conscious movement to create an external form of vitality. It's not trying to be overly vigorous for the sake of being vigorous, but rather that movement is helping us to see what the feeling of movement has to do with an inner experience of flow of awareness. We're moving with our body purposefully, but then we're holding certain postures in stillness, trying to feel what a flow of awareness feels like in the conscious movement where we prepare for a posture, enter a posture, and then hold it as we deepen that posture. It allows us to feel abhyasa in two distinct ways, as we're working with our body to move it into a particular posture, and then establish ourselves in that asana, which literally means that posture where we're established, held, grounded, and feel what a peaceful flow of awareness feels like in physical stillness, which itself might feel like a contradiction. That a flow of awareness is awareness when we're moving. It is easier to feel it that way, but we begin to also feel that I am still energetically present in a unique way in conscious stillness. That's an expression of a pranic awareness. This energetic flow that we can experience both in movement and in stillness. When it's purposeful, peaceful, that energetic flow of awareness is called abhyasa. The effort to experience a peaceful flow of awareness. So abhyasa has everything to do with sthiram and sukham. It takes effort to find that stability because we don't know how our body really works. We have to be reintroduced, which is where it's good to try a number of different expressions of asana to see if we truly feel held. When we truly feel held, we allow our mind to really experience that feeling of being held and see that it feels good. Sukham, ease, comfort, freedom from pain. That expression of sukham naturally and innately leads us to reflect on what am I really feeling? What makes this space feel good? What makes this posture feel good? Why am I feeling this way? That's what transforms asana from a physical practice into an experiential, energetic, inward practice. Understanding why do I feel good in this posture? Other thing which is implicit here is that in this approach is that asana and breath awareness are considered to be integral to each other. That when we're working with trying to use asana as conscious movement and conscious stillness, the word conscious is very important. What makes a movement conscious or unconscious in the context of asana classically is our awareness of our breathing process, and specifically an inhalation and exhalation as we either move or as we're still. That reference point of the flow of breath, inhalation being the inward flow of breath, upward flowing awareness, and exhalation being an outward flow of breath or downward flowing awareness, is what allows consciousness, let's call it awareness, because I don't mean consciousness in that metaphysical sense, but awareness, to be linked to either movement or stillness. It's the difference between laying on your back to fall asleep and laying on your back to practice relaxation. It's the difference between physical therapy or any other form of a physical exercise and asana, where there's a very intentional use of breath awareness, and specifically the feeling that propels inhalation or that feeling that accompanies inhalation and the feeling that accompanies exhalation, and using those two feelings as not just a reference point, but as a driver to our experience of movement and stillness. Extremely simple, but very, very profound. The richness behind the experience of breath is so vast that yoga goes on and on talking about it. And one of the challenges with the modern mind often is that if it's so simple, how can it be important? How can it really tell me something new? And that's the mystery, that the awareness that lies behind breath is very rich. That upward flowing awareness of inhalation and downward flowing awareness of exhalation are an experience of pranic awareness, an energetic awareness that is what the body is trying to express through whatever it does. That kind of energetic experience is what fills the space of our body and which we experience as sukham, good space, space filled with a potent pranic awareness. To make it real, we have to practice. We have to use asana as a physical practice where we're working with breath-aligned conscious movement and breath-aligned conscious stillness. As we do it, we work with it so that we see this breath-aligned conscious movement and breath-aligned conscious stillness leading us to a more and more innate sense of stability, where we allow our body to hold us. We allow our body to hold us. We think that it'll just, unless we're falling over, we're being held. But we realize that it's more than that. We need to be reintroduced to what our body's all about. And it takes a lot of different energetic configurations of the body to really see it from enough vantage points that it becomes real. That's why there's 84 classical postures and 84,000 variations, they say, so to speak, of those. It takes a lot of diversity of experience being in the body with conscious movement and conscious stillness to really feel held. and repetition. That repetition allows stability to genuinely bring us an experience of goodness within our body, pranic awareness. When that happens, many, many, many things become possible. One last comment to make here about asana is that in the classical sense, so much emphasis is placed on seated postures in the context of Yoga Sutra. But it doesn't mean that the non-seated postures aren't integrally linked to an experience of sthiram and sukham. All of the limbs that follow asana are based on the idea that you have substantial proficiency in a seated posture. That's why classically so much importance is given. But when you look at asana as it relates to hatha yoga and not these eight limbs, we clearly see that a much broader range of postures beyond a seated posture have been developed and expressed to allow us to bring balance and nourish these twin energetic forces, the solar and lunar energies within our body. The idea of solar and lunar energies within the body are two expressions of pranic awareness. So the full range of asana beyond classical seated postures, which appear to be the emphasis in Yoga Sutra, are extraordinarily important in cultivating pranic awareness. We talked so much about conscious movement, breath-aligned conscious movement. So much of that happens through the non-seated postures, which is why they're at the heart of Hatha Yoga. So it's implicit here. The idea of sthiram and sukham implies that we practice a broad range of postures. But ultimately, we're trying to direct that experience of sthiram and sukham in an experience of conscious stillness. That conscious stillness comes through practices which are on our back in Shavasana, which lead us towards Pratyahara, a limb that we'll talk about next session, or in a seated posture, which lead us to pranayama, or the three limbs of meditation. So conscious stillness is really based in the idea of substantial mastery in sthiram and sukham, which is what this sutra is really focused on. When we look at asana in this light, we realize that the goal of asana is to help us be in our body fully and not just be here on autopilot mode. It's absolutely impossible to experience sthiram and sukham until we know who we are in a deeper level. Unconscious awareness of our body going through the motions will never lead us to sthiram or sukham, stability or comfort. Tremendous degree of purpose-driven engagement with our body and breath is what leads to an experience of sthiram and sukham, both of which are an expression of pranic awareness. Once we reach there, there being some degree of feeling of stability and comfort in our body and breath, something amazing happens. Sutra 247. Perfection in asana is attained by loosening of tension caused by effort and by mental absorption in the infinite. So two unique practices are introduced so that we can achieve perfection in asana. It's very important to see what the sutra is saying. The foundation of asana is an experience of sthiram and sukham. That gives us the proficiency to begin moving forward. And there's a natural progression that once we find stability, that stability naturally matures into an experience of sukham, comfort. Once we really allow ourselves to experience that comfort, be nourished by it, to understand what that good space, that space filled with pranic awareness is all about, we have the potential to really unlock the deeper power of asana. That's what 247 is saying. First word here is prayatana shaitilya, loosening of the tension caused by effort. Sometimes translated as effortless effort. I wrote down a few really succinct definitions. Before we go into that, this Sutra 247 is, in my opinion, synonymous with asana as pranic awareness. So we said this, the topic for this entire session is unlocking the deeper power or the essence of asana through pranic awareness. Pranic awareness certainly has something to do with Sthiram and Sukham, but it has everything to do with 247. And the purpose of 247 is to gain perfection in asana. And in sutra style, every word is really important. So to say that this can allow us to achieve perfection in something is, again, a very big statement. Both of these practices are extremely simple at first glance, but are very, very powerful. They're practices that really take us to the heart of what pranic awareness are all about. Prayatna Shaithilya. Quoting directly from the commentary, the effort involved in asana must not cause fatigue or tension. The effort involved must not cause fatigue or tension. Somehow, we have to work with our body in a way that we don't create any more tension or any stress in any part of the body. One of the things that I didn't read to you from the commentary on 246 was an interesting definition of stability and comfort that this commentary uses, where both stability and comfort is a unique condition of a limb, limb, organ, or system, where that limb, organ, or system is not disturbing or disrupting any other limb, organ, or system. Everything is completely in balance, supporting each other, which is a really interesting way of looking at stability and comfort. Obviously, when we work with the body, there's always some degree of physical effort that's required, or at least it seems like that. So somehow, this Sutra 247 is telling us that there's a way to practice asana where we don't have to expend any effort in the conventional sense. Every effort will have some residue of stress or tension in it. So it seems like it's an impossible statement. How can you possibly do anything with your body where you're not engaged in some way? If we weren't engaged, wouldn't we just turn into a puddle of mush and just collapse into nothingness? And it really inspires us to think, is there some deeper dimension of myself which this is the superstructure on which this physical body is resting? Can my physical body truly be held, truly be stable and comfortable without me being the one who's doing it? Is it possible for Atlas to put the weight of the shoulders off for just a brief moment, or will the world collapse? We're in our body just like that, where we never feel like we can take a second off. The pressure is always on, and if I don't hold my body up, I will fall. Asana is trying to help us see that there is a capacity in my body which is what allows my body to be in the first place. That's what is my strength, and the body is an expression of it. This effortless effort, Prayatna Shaithilya, has a lot to do with breath. One of the really intriguing things that this commentary talks about is that from an experiential, practical perspective, this is very simple. The ability to breathe diaphragmatically with all the qualities of a yogic breath, a breath which is smooth, even, deep, continuous, meaning free from pause, and silent. A yogic breath, breathing yogically while in a posture, is an expression of Prayatna Shaithilya, or at least it's an entry point. That before we fully understand what it means to be effortless in asana, which is a very challenging idea, because in the conscious part of our life, while we're awake, we feel like we're always doing something. We're not allowed to let go of that effort. And when we do, it feels like we're falling asleep. It feels like we're disengaging. Asana and this idea of prayatana shaithalya is the exact opposite of disengagement. It's not trying to become inert. It's not trying to fall asleep. But rather, to be so awake to that, to unique capacity of the body and breath, that we no longer need to engage in effort in the conventional sense. It begins by allowing our breath to hold us, by experiencing a truly relaxed, effortless, yet empowered breath. When we can do that in a posture, we begin to work with prayatana shaithalya, effortless effort. And what we've all experienced is that when we're holding a posture and we feel like we can breathe freely, we have a genuine sense that I'm able to rest in this posture. This posture is able to hold me, nourish me. It takes us right back to the last sutra, actually. When I'm able to breathe comfortably in a posture, I know that I'm feeling stable and I feel comfortable. If there's any sense of restriction in our breathing, we're definitely not comfortable. Absolutely impossible. Even just a little bit of suffocation is enough for our nervous system and brain to start firing off all sorts of alarms that this could take us in a bad direction. So you can see why this deceptively simple definition of the ability to breathe comfortably, breathe diaphragmatically, breathe yogically in our asana is the gateway to prayatana shaithalya, effortless effort. Effortlessness doesn't mean that we're not focused, engaged in a disciplined, purpose-driven way. It simply means that we're not contributing to any experience of tension. Breath should be the epitome of effortless effort, a yogic breath. It's completely natural. And we allow that effortless nature of our breath to express itself in the asana, in the posture, and more specifically, in the experience of the space which our body occupies in that posture. That space which is filled with sukham, or which is sukham, I should say, goodness. Prayatana shaithalya is the first half of the Sutra 247, sutra which allows us to gain perfection in asana. When we can breathe effortlessly in a posture and be in a posture in a manner where we're free from tension, we eventually gain the capacity to experience ananta samapatti. Literally, absorption in ananta, which is usually translated as the infinite. So a few very important things to recognize. The idea of absorption has everything to do with abhyasa. It's a highly mature state of abhyasa. Abhyasa is the effort to experience this peaceful flow of awareness. To be more specific, if we went back to the sessions we looked at in the last book study group, we said that abhyasa is the effort to experience sthiti, the effort to experience a peaceful flow of awareness. The idea of samapatti, or absorption, is a highly mature state of sthiti, peaceful flow of awareness. When we're genuinely able not only experience that peaceful flow of awareness, but remain there, for that to start to feel like our natural state of being, that momentary experience of a peaceful flow of awareness turns into something prolonged. That's what absorption is all about. And we'll come back to the word samapatti. In fact, if we look back at the end of Samadhipada, we spend a good amount of time talking about the word samapatti, where we allow our awareness to be fully absorbed in a unique experience of oneness. Here, this unique experience of oneness is an experience of a peaceful state of awareness in the space of our body. Rather, in the space which our body occupies, I should say. Space which our body occupies is one way of looking at this word ananta, or the infinite. It's the space of consciousness. So we're no longer saying that it's a specific part of our body that I'm feeling, but rather I know that my body rests in a unique space of consciousness. When my eyes are closed, when I'm in my asana, and I'm established there, and I'm breathing comfortably, I'm experiencing a profound sense of stillness. I begin to feel truly held by my posture. And in doing so, I'm able to feel the space that my body occupies. I'm able to feel the space which holds my body. The space which holds my body is a space of consciousness, ananta. What we're doing with this practice of prayatna shaithilya is allowing our mental awareness, this peaceful flow of awareness, to be fully absorbed in an experience of the space which our body occupies. We know that we're in our body. We know that we're held by our body. And that feeling of being held is comfortable and stable. We remain there. And we keep breathing. We breathe effortlessly. As we breathe effortlessly, we begin to see that it's no longer my physical breath or my physical inhalation and exhalation, but the unique energetic quality of my inhalation and the unique energetic quality of my exhalation, which is allowing me to be effortless, allowing me to be held, allowing me to feel fully alive in this extraordinary state of stillness. That ability, which comes from this pranic awareness, this energetic awareness, which propels our breath, is what transforms an experience of our body into an experience of a subtle space. Just like prana is the subtle energetic counterpart of breath, the idea of space is a subtle counterpart to our physical body. Our body is held in a space of consciousness, just like our physical breath is not only held by, but brought to life and propelled by an energetic awareness called prana. Pranic awareness is a feeling. We feel it as we work with our breath. That allows us to see our body as more than our body. And eventually, it allows us to be fully held by that experience of the space of consciousness which holds our body. That is called ananta samapatti. I mentioned that we'll come back to the idea of Ishwara Pranidhana, the third principle of Kriya Yoga. You might say that the tapas and swadhyaya are what we experienced or practiced in how we work with asana for stability, comfort, and effortless effort. Once we begin to work with ananta samapatti, it's almost the literal definition in some regards to what Ishwara Pranidhana is all about. Ishwara Pranidhana is that maturity of experience which allows us to be truly held, allows us to be completely held by that highest experience within. So Ishwara Pranidhana doesn't just have to do with some kind of meditative experience. When we're practicing asana that's fully nourished by pranic awareness, and we allow that experience to really mature and lead us to a place of feeling the space which our body occupies and the space which holds our body in the first place, and surrender the effort of being to that space and simply breathe. That is an expression of Ishvara Paridhana through asana. We allow ourselves to be truly held. The only way we can do that is by releasing our attachment to being the one who's doing the asana. Release the effort. What does releasing the effort mean? We no longer create more tension in our experience, but rather we allow ourselves to be truly held. It seems very subtle. So begin with something very practical. Go back to Prayatna Shaitilya, if this idea of Ananta Samapatti seems too esoteric. Is it possible to hold a posture where I can feel like I'm truly comfortable and my breath is relaxed? Where does my mind go? So the key thing here might be, rather than allowing my mind to wander aimlessly when I'm in that state of breath awareness in my posture, allow my mind to flow purposefully, peacefully. Bring abhyasa back in the picture. The abhyasa to get into the asana and the breath awareness is a physical practice, is a breath practice. Once I'm there and I know what my body's supposed to do and I know what my breath is supposed to do, see where my mind is at and invite the mind to flow effortlessly, the mind being our awareness, our sense of feeling. Allow that sense of feeling, that mental awareness, to flow in parallel to our inhalation and exhalation. See if there's some experience of an upward flowing awareness as we inhale in that posture, in whatever up means in that posture, and a downward flowing awareness or an inward flowing awareness with each exhalation. It gives our mind something specific to focus on, so that we begin to actually work with our mind in asana as much as we work with our body and breath. That might be one of the missing links that allows us to get something out of 247, where we begin to see asana as not only a practice of the body, but really a practice of the mind. It's extremely important, because how else could asana be an expression of abhyasa, unless we see it in this way? Abhyasa being that effort to reach that peaceful flow of awareness. We reach there through asana by seeing how the body itself is a gateway to that peaceful flow of awareness. And that really culminates with Ananta Samapatti. This Sutra 247 is a big one. And it really becomes a lifelong practice to see how stability and comfort in asana can lead us to effortless effort, can lead us to a state where we feel that our breath is no longer just breath, but rather an extraordinarily rich, energetic awareness that flows with each inhalation and exhalation. Once we start transforming our attitude towards breath awareness and see it as a feeling of pranic awareness, feeling of peaceful flow of awareness, then we really shift gears a bit. And 247 makes complete sense. Practice makes perfect. 248 talks about the unique gifts that we receive from 246 and 247. From that, everything that we just talked about in 246 and 247, comes lack of injury caused by the pairs of opposites. In some ways, this is telling us that when we practice asana in its full maturity, as described in 247, we become free from injury. Or more specifically, injuries where we go beyond our capacity. Injuries that are defined by being pulled in two opposite directions. So what 248 is really saying, different way of saying it, is that our capacity expands exponentially when we practice 246, 247, when we practice asana, which leads us to a genuine experience of stability and comfort, and which is further refined and perfected through effortless effort, where we're in a posture and truly held by our breath, and allow that breath to unveil its full force, its pranic awareness, the force which propels breath in the first place and brings the body to life, and surrender ourselves to that experience. From that, our physical and energetic capacity expands exponentially. We transcend pain. We transcend the limitations which are imposed by these pairs of duality, these extremes. And that can be taken in the literal sense of physical extremes, but even more importantly, any type of limitations, even in our mind. It's amazing when we talk about extremes in, as far as our physical awareness. And this sutra commentary and the classical commentaries talk about the extremes of heat and cold, hunger or complete indulgence. These are extremes of our body, they're extremes in our senses, and they're partially in our mind, all three somehow completely intermingled. How do we overcome the injuries caused by an experience of these extremes? By expanding our capacity so we can contain all of it. That capacity is partially physical, but much more than physical, it's an energetic capacity, pranic capacity. Asana allows us to start feeling the deeper power which brings our body to life, the deeper power which brings breath to life. That's our pranic capacity. When we do that, we're much, much bigger and stronger and clearer than we ever knew. And that kind of capacity is exactly what Prayatna Shaithilya, this effortless effort, and Ananta Samapatti, the ability to be truly held by the infinite within, is all about. That capacity comes from our pranic capacity, not from our body. But our body is the gateway to experience it and to make it real to us. So it's not just something we think about, but something that we can feel. Any physical capacity that comes because of that is a great bonus. It's a side effect. It's a siddhi. It's an accomplishment. But not necessarily the prime goal. And it was the previous sutra or the one before, the commentary spends a lot of time talking about the unique capacities of the body and senses, which are quite intriguing. And those qualities, these extraordinary capacities of the body and senses, arise from our pranic capacity, or our ability to be aware of our pranic capacity, not necessarily our body. All of these gifts spring forward when we start to become sensitive to the power which brings our body to life. If our body is a machine, prana is that capacity which powers the machine. And all of these unique gifts of the body and senses are different expressions of that power as they flow through our body and senses. But we need to have access to the power in the first place. That's why there's so much emphasis placed on working with the breath to catch that thread of pranic awareness, to begin feeling what it feels like to be in our body, to begin feeling what breath really feels like, or rather the flow of breath. Once we do that, it's a matter of shaping it, harnessing it, making it tangible, which is why continuous repetition from a myriad of vantage points, literally from a myriad of asanas, a myriad of energetic configurations of the body in movement and in stillness, where abhyasa is the organizing principle, trying to feel a peaceful flow of awareness in all of those different reference points and see the same thing 1,000 different ways. Rather, I should say, feel the same thing 1,000 different ways. Once we do that, these aren't just words anymore. Prayatna Shaithilya and Ananta Samapatti are an experiential reality that leads to an exponential increase in our capacity, awakening of so many unique capacities of the body and senses. And most importantly, leads to a tangible experience of pranic potential. It's not just an idea It's a feeling of awareness within our body and beyond. Feeling of awareness that is sculpted or expressed by our breath, but is far, far more. Once we have sensitivity to pranic awareness, we can begin working with it, which is exactly where the next sutra continues, the idea of pranayama, concentrating that pranic awareness and beginning to give it a more tangible shape as a focal point for our inward awareness, our inward journey. And that's exactly where we'll pick up next time. Thank you.